ज्ञानेन मनुष्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपाकृतामायां ददाति सा प्रदान्तिकम् पञ्चाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभयैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रियाद्वैत गदाधर शिवासदेवोर् भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. So greetings from the Sun Falls. Been up here for a little while now. And concentrating on chanting the holy name. Nama Shresham. I think that's from Raghunath Das Goswami when he's offering respects to the Guru, the gift that he's gotten, Nama Shresham, the best thing is the holy name. The best thing is the holy name. Spiritual life is actually very simple, and the message of the Shastra is simple. But to give you conviction in that message, and to make very clear what is not the path of pure devotion, and to free you from doubts, and to purify you gradually so that you can take to and understand that message, the Bhagavatam is expanded. But basically, the message of the Bhagavatam is Nam Sankirtan, that one can transcend the modes and become fixed in the absolute reality in the best way by chanting the names of one's beloved Lord at a platform where there's no inhibition and there's no attachment. So that's the simple message, and I've been trying to take to that simple message. Doesn't leave as much time for reading and studying as I wanted, and basically what this Wednesday class is, until I decide on a particular text I can teach, or which may not happen, I may just continue, is basically just share with you and hopefully discuss things that I'm thinking about and studying. But that's been my focus. And it's really revelatory when you chant a lot, how you find the time to do it. And you find where you do activities that you extended your participation in them, perhaps more than you need. And also, because I'm actually doing that and I'm writing, really concentration in the Holy Name, prayer in the Holy Name, it really sharpens one's intelligence. So I'm finding that in the service of writing, I become much more efficient. So I'm pretty excited about that. I thought what I could do today is give you coming attractions. And of course, I don't know people listening to this all around the world, but I'm going to give a lecture on this Sunday in Yoga Studio, Yoga Maya, which is a beautiful, just to see it, it's a beautiful Indian temple-type design. And I'm privileged and honored to be the person connected with that yoga studio that gives the philosophical input. Otherwise, they're teaching yoga classes and something is there. And we had a very, very nice turnout the last time I spoke, even though it's the summer. And in the summer, people in New York City leave. I saw this cartoon today where there's these two people from New York City and they're sitting on a private beach in the Hamptons and lamenting the parking spaces that they could have gotten in New York. Parking is horrible in New York except for the summertime and the weekends because everyone goes out. It's the only time you can go to New York and you can find a good parking spot. So, but still the attendance is nice. So I thought I'd discuss a little bit about environment on consciousness. It's connected with my studies into the Yoga Sutras, which we did in this class. And very interesting point of the mind being malleable. It's like clay, but clay that's constantly being reshaped or reformed. And we know, according to the yoga psychology, that the elemental substratum of matter, both spiritual and gross, is the same. These strands of matter are called gunas, and they form different shapes or different forms that give you the ability to conduct different activities, or if externally, everything is in these modes. So within the mind, it gives you, the shape of the mind gives you the ability to conduct particular activities. It determines your self-discipline, it determines your contentment, it determines your perception. And externally, everything's also in the modes. And when they're formed externally, they allure you to certain mental states, or they influence you to come to certain mental states. So basically, as we know, there are three basic forms. And like primary colors, those three can be mixed in an infinite amount of ways. But basically, it's ignorance, passion, and goodness. And goodness, is sattva, and sattva means the nature of being. It's kind of like matter has a form that enables self-realization, and it's kind of like a machine for self-realization. It's a machine for pure awareness, And as the machine breaks down, that function becomes increasingly impaired. So sattva is matter in its proper place. And matter in its proper place functions for enlightenment. So goodness is matter functioning both externally to influence you and internally for enlightenment, which means the characteristics of goodness are contentment, because you're in a high state of perception of reality, self-discipline, it gives you a certain type of detachment and reflectiveness, and vision and perception. You're seeing truth. So it's a very high level of self-discipline. And of course, passion is the perception is dampened. In passion, you don't see things as clearly. You become restless. You become restless. And you have less free will, obviously, in passion. You become more impulsive. And it satisfies the desire for more and better. It's intense activity. Intense activity based on impulsive desire. And then ignorance. Ignorance is the form or shape of matter. Ignorance is the form of shape or matter which goodness is prakash, it's light, the illumination, the clarity of thought. It's no light. And passion is activity, it's no activity. So basically, passion is anxiety and ignorance is depression, and ignorance totally obscures one's vision, and therefore not having self-discipline, not having vision, it leads to inertia. The lack of movement towards anything that's good, actually. This is not exactly my class, but it's going in another way. So basically, the mind is always moving, and according to different factors. One is just one's karma, what the nature one has and the nature that destiny is moving one. It's a very, very powerful influence on how the mind will be. But there's also the environment, how the external very, very much affects the internal. So if the external is in goodness, it will move the mind to a higher level of perception, a higher level of contentment, and a higher level of self-discipline. The environment, and then one is the decisions one makes. If you make the appropriate decisions in any situation, there's a science of that called dharma. What is the right course of action? The right course of action, of course, it's the moral action, it's the spiritual action, but simultaneously it's the action that impacts the mind to a higher level of perception, contentment, and perception, contentment, and will, really. So the seminar I want to give is discussing the power environment on consciousness. A very interesting thing, this quote from Paramahamsa Yogananda, in terms of willpower, environment is more, in terms of self-discipline, environment is more important than willpower. So in the class, I wanted to discuss that because it's so important, very, very practical. Using the environment to make better decisions. There's two things, jnana and vairagya. I explained that many times. Jnana is what to do with any jnana and vairagya, knowledge and detachment. Without knowledge, you don't know what to do. Without detachment, you can't do it. So, what I'd like to focus on the class is the things that you have knowledge about but lack the self-discipline. In other words, the things in your world that you can do but you don't. And there is something within your capacity, not above, beyond your capacity. There are things within your capacity. You know, someone's eating too many sweets. You know, someone's smoking. Rising, doing a certain amount of yoga every day. There's things within people's capacity that they're not achieving because they lack self-discipline. They just lack self-discipline. They're within their capacity to achieve. And, you know, decisions determine our fate. It's a common theme that I stress because it's a very important point. What you're doing in the past, what you are now is determined what you did in the past. What you do now will determine what you are in the future. So, you know, an activity, even a simple activity that one can do, that one should do, one can do, but they're not, can have incredible impact on one's consciousness. Consciousness is everything. Consciousness is what makes one happy. Not our circumstances, it's our consciousness. And our consciousness is determined by the decisions we make. That's what molds our consciousness. Consciousness is everything. That's why it's so important to chant and keep the mind occupied, because sound is the most powerful external element of the consciousness. So what I'd like to do in my class is just briefly discuss the different sense objects and the modes. And the different things in one's life that can be in different modes that impact one, and try to get the class actually to just focus on one thing that they can do. If I have time at the end of the class, I might discuss how habits are formed. But Yeah, it's just such very, very nice experiment. I was speaking to a friend who knew Sadafuta. I also knew Sadafuta and Einstein, a great scientist, probably most brilliant mind in Srila Prabhupada's movement. I met him, by the way. I was in college. This Sadafuta, I was in college State University in Binghamton, and then I graduated and I went to graduate school. To go to graduate school, I was working during the day in a printing company. And I would work in the shop, and then I would deliver things. One day I went to the post office, and I can remember it as clear as day, because I used to go to the Brooklyn Temple in 1970. I saw a Bhatt brother, a poor guy. He used to cook in the MBT. He used to cook in Radha. We had that restaurant in New York. His son is Amala Purana. His nice kirtan. And I saw him, and I guess he was distributing Prabhupada's books. And I said, "Where are you?" He said, "Well, I was just distributing books, and I was up in Cornell. There's a nice devotee up there, and he's studying for his PhD." So he gave me the number, and I went up there. And Upanuga, who's the GBC in Buffalo, he had enough vision to send this sincere person back to get his PhD, and he sent one brahmachari to be his temple president. And to this day, I remember how good that cooking was, that cabbage and potato sabji with whole coriander seeds. Sometimes you remember things. And I remember asking Sadafuta some kind of, and talking to him. He would eat this big breakfast, and then he would go on a jog, and then the rest of the day he'd write his PhD. This one bloody thing here. When I was talking to him, I just remember so clearly, and by God's grace, I have a gift of understanding talent. I can assess people. I know what people can do. And I was just, it was when he answered my question, basically speaking, it was one of the highest, most beautiful conceptual and expressive thoughts practically ever heard in my life. Anyway, Sadafuta did a lot of studies later, paranormal psychology, and there was an experiment. And in the experiment, they had a kind of like this, it was almost like a pinball machine, but it was kind of perpendicular to the floor. And they would throw these, to a funnel, they would throw these ping pong balls. So they come through just this hole randomly. And they would either somehow wind up to the left or the right of the middle. So they brought this machine to some yoga conference, and they had meditators meditating either on the left side. Or something, or the right side. And they had a scientific controlled experiment, and as the meditators held the balls to one side, there was a marked increase on that side. Now, they did the same experiment later in the Chamber of Commerce, and they did not have the same success in the experiment. Now, It just to me, just shows how profoundly environment does affect consciousness. It's not just a psychological thing you think. It actually has a gross physical impact on the construction and mode of your mind, according to the modes that it's in. So I thought in my class I would discuss that, and then people could meditate on their environment and an aspect of the environment that they can change. And increase their willpower substantially. I have to say myself, I tried that experiment because let's say the object of sight is also in the mode. So when things are in their place and things are clean, that's sight in the mode of goodness. And therefore, matter in that shape will influence the mind to come to that shape. Therefore, when you're studying or writing, a writer, the first thing he should do is clean his desk. His focus will increase. Goodness means light, illumination. There's a difference thinking when you're in the mode of ignorance and thinking when you're in the mode of goodness. When you're in the mode of ignorance, you try to read a book, you can't even see the page. You'll have to read the sentence over again and again. When you're in the mode of goodness, the clarity will be there. The light will be there. That's why in the morning, when it's the mode of goodness, when you think and when you taste, and when you know, it's just such a higher perception. You know, in the morning you can actually, because these light is coming through the senses. That's what goodness basically of all the senses, the perceptions become more and more subtle. So you're more likely to smell the fragrances and see the beauty. Because it's mindful. Ignorance means you're in the past. Passion means you're in the future. You never live your life. So sight. I just had that experiment myself. I mean, I was coming up here for 2 weeks, and I really wanted to do Kudnam Bhajan. You can't be restless, which is passion, and you can't be have inertia. These are the two things that are against meditation. And so I really, because I'm in and out of here, I just bear down for the first 3 or 4 days. Really try to look in my room and find out what I need and where is the place for everything. Try to put it in its position for enlightenment. What I really need. Of course, things inherently may be in different modes. You may put a neat record collection that has all music in the mode of ignorance, and you may put neat paintings that are have an effect that, they're just absolute, pornography or something, in the mode of passion. So, but still, just putting things in its place and really making that effort. Why don't we put things in our place? Because we're not mindful. Somehow we're in passion. Means we're thinking the future. I don't have time. Or ignorance, I don't want to do it. And that consciousness creates your environment. Someone in goodness, as they're cooking, they're cleaning up. the mind hook. They're in goodness, the environment becomes in goodness. But you leave something because you have no time. It's either passion or you're just too lazy to do it. It's ignorance. And then the environment becomes in that, and it substantially impacts your consciousness. So I was very, very determined. It's not that, you know, just someone is anally clean, he's in the mode of goodness. But that aspect of his life may be one of the most positive things. Maybe not the music, maybe not his sex life, maybe not, you know, so many other things, his actions. So it's not just a one thing, but I know in my life that sometimes I'm regretful in that way. So I really made an effort, and it substantially impacted my consciousness. Substantially. And I can feel it in terms of the, and what to speak of the practice and the meditation, what that does for the mind, because that's also being mindful, putting oneself the mantra. Of course, there's something beyond the modes, and that's the pure spiritual awareness itself, and spiritual activities can mold the mind according to the soul, can mold the mind for not just attachment, but for purity, for selflessness. Very important. That's why in previous days, Brahmin Prabhupada said meant always cleaning. They were so clean. You see what a real Brahmin in India is. It's super clean. Always doing akshmana, that purifies the mind, the consciousness. Simply, you know, bathing. Always washing. They would carry a water pot. Their business was clarity of thought, which is the whole purpose of meditation, is to come to a point where you can have proper perception, subtle perception. You can see. So in that type of process, the next lecture I'm going to give is Yoga Made Easy by Music, How Kirtan Works. That's in September, which we will explain a process, how to achieve transcendence, even if you're not Brahminical. But very, very powerful. Brahmins would keep clean. So very, very important in spiritual life. I also wanted to talk about, I'm also going to talk about the object of sound, which is, because the object of sound is the most absorbing and really has the most effect on consciousness. I mean, music, proper sound, can immediately impact the consciousness. And I'm going to tell of various experiments. Very interesting. Where that does so. Very, very interesting how much sound. And therefore, in a class like this, you can always end in kirtan. It's just a practical demonstration of what proper sound can do to the consciousness, how powerfully it can mold the mind. And, the one thing about the modes is that the shape of your mind is also the perception of how you want to enjoy. If you want to enjoy peacefulness or activity or inertia. And sometimes people want to enjoy inertia. So they like environments that impact that. They like the environments where it's dark, where the environment is dirty, where there's a certain type of music. You create your environment. That's why a person's environment is really a reflection of a lot in terms of his consciousness. Provided he has control over his environment. So I really want to discuss hearing and the power of hearing It's like smell, you know. When something is rotten, what does it mean? It means it's changed from its kind of like matter had like a pure state, and in the pure state, fragrance comes. And somehow or other, there's a neglect of something, an inertia in something that creates a certain effect, which is a stale odor. You know, and yes, it's the pure. What to speak of food is so important in consciousness. Food is so important in consciousness because the person who cooks the food, this is just from the platform of modes, the person who is in goodness, that's why Brahmins were the cooks. The person in goodness would create food in that mode. I'm not going to get into prasadam now, spiritual food, but it would create in a particular mode. And if you eat that, it would have a particular effect on your consciousness. It would. Famous story of Tamal Krishnamurti went into one temple. And there's one suicide there, there's a lot of mental. The first thing he did was check the kitchen for consciousness. And then things in the mode, the people, you know, people watch TV, they admire certain people, that type of respect creates a conduit for that person to influence one's consciousness. So, therefore, in a proper society, to keep people's minds pure, the proper exemplars are there. What to speak of people in the mode of goodness, people who are sadhus, what effect they will have on our consciousness. And that's why it's so important to read in the healthy ways. I mean, this is such a science of consciousness. And we know, you know, it's very, very profound, the Vedic or Indian thought. We know how to make the mind content, how to make the mind perceptive, how to make the mind controlled. Time of the day has an effect. A place has an effect. Movement is the mode of passion. Now, it should be understood that we need to act, and we need also inertia. We need to sleep, we need to act. But in the proper culture, the decisions or ideas to do that are goodness. Because it's how much you sleep and what you do. So it's not that the other modes, you don't use the modes. It's not that you don't use the modes. You do use the modes. But movement, that's one advantage, actually, of New York City, that you don't need a car. It's a part of New York City that creates goodness. But, you know, ideal life, you know, everything was in one location. Everything was in one location. It was a very beautiful thing. So, the movement creates passion. Fast life creates passion. Movement creates passion because it's intense activity. And it creates that restlessness in the mind. So there's also a culture where there's a reason why there's a culture where needs were met in village, and how the modern day culture is not conducive to happiness. And, you know, what do? Well, you know the science, and then you apply it, just like you're someone's in the city. But they can have a place. It's hard, but they should have a place. They should have their place. Ideally, there should be a place which is sattvic and clean for meditation. Place. So, very powerful, you know, when in the Bhagavad Gita, I remember one way that I got interested in this class was in reading the Bhagavad Gita. When it came to the 14th chapter, I was so surprised that it said Paramabhuya, topmost jnanam, the topmost knowledge. And it didn't make sense to me, because if you understand the Bhagavad Gita, you know, bhakti is in the center, and it's considered the most important for so many reasons, but, you know, but at least the jnanam of cultivation of knowledge, it's the most important. Why? Because that's science. You know, people are just blinded. They have no control over their mind, their contentment, their self-discipline. But if you know how it works, it's just like yoga or you know, some kind of intense yoga or meditation. What it creates a distance. A distance between what happens to you and how you react. You're in the mode of ignorance, something happens to you, immediately react without judging that action. Mode of goodness means something may happen to you and you may feel in a particular way to react, but you may feel in a particular way to react. But there's a distance, there's a time between what happens and how you react. In other words, impulsively means something happens to you, this is how you feel about it, and this is what you do. Whether it's good or not for you, you can't help it. But with some thought and pensiveness, you may feel this way, but it may not be the best way to respond for your consciousness, for morality, whatever. So goodness creates that. It creates. But anyway, the focus of my talk here, and I was, you know, the future things I will discuss yoga psychology, is just the environment. You have to understand the environment. You have to understand the effect of people, the effect of the time of the day, the effect of the place. I was just thinking, you know, in modern life, how quick things are moving. And I was just thinking, you know, because should I be on Facebook? Because should I not be on Facebook? Because, you know, for communication, community, and so many things. So there's advantages. But I look at the disadvantages in terms of the media. Marshall McLuhan, the medium is the message. Basically, it means each medium has a particular look. It's exceptionally passionate. It means it's restless. It's moving in a very, very unnatural way. I mean, if you think of it this way in one sense, people are tortured because they're always faced with a myriad of choices. So much energy goes into choices. And the amount of choice creates a paralysis in people. Well, people can never be focused. I mean, right now, people are connected to their community and work 24 hours a day. So whenever they're doing something, there's a whole other world that's imposed on them. It can never be in one place. There's always a choice of something else. I was listening to a very, very interesting lecture called The Paradox of Choice by a psychologist named Barry Schwartz. And he outlined what he called an official dogma. Basically, if you want to maximize people's welfare, you know, they have to have more. They have to have more choices, more choices they have, the more freedom they have, and the more freedom is this maximum choice. Basically, that's America. You have maximum choice. But he gave the example of sometimes, you know, you go to a doctor, and previously the doctor would tell you what to do, and then now he'll tell you, well, you have this choice. You can take this medicine or that, or you can do this or that. What do you want? Well, you tell me, doctor. He said, no, you can do this or that. You know, choice is, of course, good, but there's a certain level where the amount of choice becomes paralysis. He gave an example that in an electronics store, you know, you can make your own stereo systems. And he said the average amount of stereo systems you can create within an average store is almost 7 million. You know, if you want the iPod or this or how or this. So choices. And he said that as a teacher, he gives 20%. Less work to his students because his students are so consumed with deciding whether to get married or who to marry or who to stay with. There's just so much energy. And a classical culture, they try to limit those choices. Basically, you grow up, you kind of know who you marry because there's a certain compatibility, right? And, basically they would have a way of making compatibility. So, you know, so they tried to minimize that choice in one sense. I'm not making any value judgments on, you know, arranged marriage or something. But basically, where you live, you grew up in your village, what your work is, went into the, you know, now people's energies, they're not even settled into their 30s. And still so much energy. And what he described is there's studies where it's actual paralysis. When you increase your choice, you increase it. And he gave an example of the study of investments, where I guess, you know, the company, if you invest, they'll match your investment. And they give choices on which funds you can invest. So he said for every 10 funds they offered, 2% less funds are chosen. So if a company averages 50 to 100 funds to choose for, that's 10 to 20% less that people will choose. And the study is even if you make choice and you make good choice because you have so many varieties, he said people are more miserable because, one, it's so easy to imagine you could have made a better choice. So the regret reduces the satisfaction with what you have. I remember when I grew up, there was one television in our house. There were seven channels. There was one car. You know, I mean, there weren't so many choices in clothes. It seemed, in one sense, when I'm looking back, a less passionate lifestyle. He said also, it also choice escalates the expectations. So even if you make a good choice, you still think it's not the best. So it's just now, I'm just seeing that with people with Facebook in the middle of a kirtan. As soon as they have a second, their phones are going like wild. Every message they have to answer, people coming in. And what I notice also, too, is people answer their mail less now. Try to communicate to people. Maybe I'm still on email. People answer less. So there's something about the medium of this rapid transfer of information, overlay of information that radically molds the mind. Radically molds the mind in passion and anxiety and restlessness and increasing of desires. And there's no wonder. Someone told me, he says, I don't understand why people can't chant 16 rounds. He just told me, he was saying why he wasn't chanting 16 rounds. That I just get up early and I do that. But it's a mode. If you're restless, you can't focus on the name. If you're lethargic, you won't want to. And if you're not focused on the name, you can't get the benefit out of it, which is that deep satisfaction of heart. Why will we not do something that will impact us the greatest in terms of satisfaction in the heart? So, yeah. So, anyway, I'm not giving the class I would give, just I'm going with so many ideas here, but I really want to present that and then give some practical examples, practical things of. And I know people who've taken this class have substantially changed their life just by changing one thing in their environment. Okay, I'm going to end now. I spoke for 50 minutes. Anybody like to ask any questions? Did someone please say hello so I know that someone's there?
Still in the
Okay. People tell me they're on the class, but not everybody likes to say hello. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances.
Thank you. Thank you, Amriya.
Thank you for class. Very helpful.
Okay. And I'll see you on Sunday.
Sunday night, yes. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Okay.
Thank you all. Panchakalpa Tarubhya Shakata Sindhavega Chapati Param Padam.